This is the Poetry Magazine podcast. I'm Don Scher, editor of Poetry Magazine.
And I'm Lindsay Garbett, managing editor. This week, we spoke with poet, translator, and human rights advocate Carolyn Forché.
Forché has translated the work of Spanish poet Fernando Valverde for several years. They met in Mexico, again in Colombia, and finally in Granada, Spain, where Valverde is from.
Fernando and I have a kind of confidence in each other. And so this translation emerged out of a deep friendship as well as a collaboration. And he is considered by his peers one of the finest poets writing in the Spanish language today.
We asked Carolyn Forché why she thought Valverde asked her to translate the book, and she said, you should ask him.
When we are talking about a poet like Carolyn Forché, you don't choose her. She chooses you. She's a social poet in the purest sense. And for that reason, she's considered to be the most beloved American poet in the Spanish-speaking world.
Valverde's new book, America, will be published this spring.
He was born in the same city as Federico García Lorca, and he's very much of that city. As poets know, Federico García Lorca, one of his most important works was The Poet in New York, which was written in the aftermath of his journey to America. And I really think that this manuscript, America, is a sort of Poet in New York by Fernando Valverde, written many, many decades later.
Valverde has now lived in the United States for 6 years. He teaches poetry at the University of Virginia.
When I first arrived, what most impacted me was the great tension between the best and the worst things about this country. This is the country that has done the most for freedom, but you could be at a party or in a church and somebody enters with a gun and starts shooting. And this is the main topic of my book, America.
Here's Carolyn Forché reading a poem from the book in translation. It's called The Ballad of New England.
Love is anterior to life, Emily Dickinson. Two roads diverged in a yellow wood, Robert Frost. After the sea, the whole sea, the cold land, the icy wind that comes from Nova Scotia and is a snow crab in the boots of a Maine fisherman who comes home for dinner. A bowl of hot soup returns the rosiness to his lips. Then he watches a log burn in the fireplace. Only fire has learned to climb on the cold. It's not that fierce for someone who has seen the sea rising in a storm. The northern shores are a lament. The crying descends through its gorges until it touches the surface of the waves on the rocks. Its mark remains, as in the faces of those who have suffered. Pain leaves its ruin. In the northern ports, it dawns early, and life is as ancient as an old sea lion. This is the shore of the first colonists from the oldest island in the world. They came chasing opportunities, following the ocean currents while they prayed. They came because they followed the word of God to a rocky shore touched by tears, over the same ocean from whence they came. They brought the songs, the nets, their words. They brought the hook and their churches, but also sin. The devil pursues his own opportunities. The bodies of the witches of New England are hanging. They hang before the multitude a few steps from Salem Harbor, where fishermen set out each night in the direction of the land of their birth. In the northern ports, life comes back with the smell of fish. It's New England time, The sun comes like an old Puritan, and it rises over the ocean and gives leave to the flight of birds. It lights a window in Amherst, where the eyes of a woman contemplate the world. Love is anterior to life. But it departs with the birds of the dawn through her window. The sun comes on the footprints of men. It comes over the trees. It is reflected in the lakes. It follows its route strictly without going off course, with a will that only faith can provide, the faith that arrived with the first ships to populate mountains. But with it also came indecision and doubt. The east and the west, watchful eyes, races, hooks, Sundays, even continents, without lines on the maps, but also the maps with their borders, freedom, the roads that diverge in a yellow wood. New England's time has come. The sun comes from the east, like a ship sent forth by the future.
One of the things that's so appealing to me and interesting me about this poem and the others of Valverde's is that actually, unlike Lorca, who kind of was in New York, kind of absorbing and critiquing life in, say, Manhattan, a big city, here's a poet who's wandering farther afield in our country and on this continent. And in that respect, to my mind, he's more like Henry David Thoreau, because he's kind of narrating things, not strictly as a visitor, nor strictly as somebody who's organically a part of a landscape, but somebody who, as kind of a member of the human race, is attentive to what's there and what's happening and the history of things. So that in a certain sense, what's lovely about both the original poem and its translation here is that in a lot of ways, it's as if it could have been written by an American in New England. It has some real qualities and overtones of Frost and of a place like Amherst or Maine, but it's somebody who can look at this with his own eye and thinking his own thoughts. That introduction where the poet is talking about what's both great about the country and what isn't, that sort of mixture is in as well the diction and language of the poem, both in the Spanish and in the English, which is why it's such a wonderful translation. It's not ambivalence. It's sort of two things at once. It's sort of an enriched way of feeling and envisioning things. And it's, to my mind, quite remarkable that any poet, wherever he might be from or she might be from, can absorb so many of the landscape's vibrations from history in this way. And that part is, I think, something that comes a little bit from the Dickinson there too. It's like all vibration in Dickinson, but very rooted in a certain landscape. You know, it's like you don't picture Emily Dickinson in Hawaii or someplace, you know. And so this question of the movement of a poem through a place and its time, which does come from Lorca too, is really rich here.
Yeah, I love the emphasis too on the movement of the natural elements in this poem in addition to the movement of its people. So the fact that the poem starts out with this sort of metaphor of the icy wind coming across both the sea, the whole sea, and the cold land, and that it then comes down from Nova Scotia. And then the metaphor is, it is a snow crab in the boots of the Maine fisherman. I love that image of the wind, you know, sort of piercing you with its claw like a snow crab would. And then the metaphor continues for that whole stanza. And later on, the sun comes, and that the movement of the sun plays a huge part in this poem, but it's set up to be the sun comes like an old Puritan, so that it's traveled the sea to come, you know, sort of experience this freedom that they believe is possible in the U.S. And I think what's really interesting about this poem, as you were saying, Don, is this sort of vibrating tension that's underneath the whole thing, the idea that these people came for freedom, but their very arrival caused all sorts of genocide and pain for the people who were already there, which are never explicitly mentioned in this poem. But there's this tension between, you know, what people come for and what also comes with that travel. So the poem says later on, with it also came indecision and doubt.
The East and the West, watchful eyes, races, hooks, Sundays, even continents, without lines on the maps, but also the maps with their borders, freedom.
That sort of juxtaposition between borders and freedom being part and parcel of what the country is all about, for better and for much worse.
There's also a kind of generosity in the poem, and that to me is like something you find in Lorca, that even under duress, there's a humanity and warmth, just shy of hope, maybe. Mm-hmm. But to understand that this is the shore of the first colonists from the oldest island in the world. They came chasing opportunities. And when they come, they're praying. And they came because, the poem reminds us, they followed the word of God to a rocky shore touched by tears over the same ocean from whence they came. You know, the tragedy that you mentioned, which is written all over our nation and its people and is alive today, can be not offset, but it can, I mean, simultaneously exists with the possibility of something better, because just as those people came following the currents, you know, that brought them here with their songs and nets and words, so too does everybody else come here, as the poet himself has. And so to me, they bring these things with them, and the poem says very sort of deftly, but also sin. You know, that kind of travel, which is a necessity and a function of so much that's deeply ingrained in humanity, even just the courageousness of making a long journey comes, it isn't innocent. No matter who does it, the devil pursues his own opportunities, which of course can only occur through us. Mm-hmm. I think at every turn in this particular poem, it sort of connects all the different points on the landscape, but also in the time and history that's been created or written over on what was there before, sort of comes to life here. And it's very apt to say love is anterior to life. I don't know, it's sort of an eerie, full heart that you can hear in these lines.
I was really struck by that notion of time in this poem too. It's repeated. You know, halfway through the poem, it says it's New England time, which is a kind of strange syntax, right? It kind of suggests, oh, we're on New England time, as in it's like a time zone or something, or time moves at its own pace in New England, something like that. And it's sort of both a geographical and a temporal zone of its own is what it seems to suggest. And the poem itself seems to take place in all these multiple different time periods, the original colonizing moment. You know, the fisherman with his snow crab could be at any point, the Salem witch trials. There's so much happening in this poem. And so at the very end, in the last couplet where it says New England's time has come, that becomes very sort of ambiguous. Is it saying every time the sun rises, it's New England's time again? You know, it's their time of day. Or is it saying it's time for us to make a new journey or a new sort of originating moment that this poem has sort of repeated over and over again? It's very suggestive to me that there's a moment coming, like the ship being sent forth from the future, that a moment is coming that will change everything, but we don't seem to quite know what that moment is.
Here's an excerpt of Fernando Valverde reading the Ballada of New England in its original language. You can hear all three of Valverde's poems in Spanish online at poetrymagazine.org.
Después del mar, de todo el mar la tierra fría, el viento helado que llega desde Nueva Inglaterra y es un cangrejo de nieve en las botas de un pescador de Maine que regresa a casa para la cena. Una sopa caliente le devuelve el color rosado de los labios. Después observa arder un tronco en la chimenea. Solo el fuego ha aprendido a trepar sobre el frío. No es demasiado feroz para quien ha visto el mar levantando una tormenta. Las orillas del norte son un lamento.
Y ya... Caroline Forché's fifth collection of poetry is just out from Penguin. It's called In the Lateness of the World. Fernando Valverde's collection, America, will be out this spring. He's the author of several poetry collections, including The Insistence of Harm.
You can read The Ballada of New England and two other poems by Valverde in the March 2020 issue of Poetry Magazine or online at poetrymagazine.org.
If you're not yet a subscriber to the magazine, and you really should be one, for a limited time, we're offering podcast listeners a special rate of $20. That's $20 for a full year of the freshest voices in contemporary poetry, featured in 11 book-length issues, as well as free digital access on our mobile app. Visit poetrymagazine.org/podcast offer to subscribe. That's poetrymagazine.org/podcast offer.
We'll have another episode for you next week, or you can get all the March episodes all at once in the full-length podcast on SoundCloud. Let us know what you thought of this program. Please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, or if you listen another way, email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. We'd love to hear your thoughts.
The Poetry Magazine podcast is recorded by Ed Herman and produced by Rachel James.
The theme music comes from the Claudia Quintet. I'm Lindsay Garbett.
And I'm Don Scher. Thanks for listening.